Interesting. Fire prevention by Liz.
It's
I'm
true.
Sorry, that just reminds me of firemen. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I just
no.
Had
oh,
hot
no.
firemen.
We just had some hot firemen standing around. There'd be less fires.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm just not going to be able to follow that.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again. I'm Rachel Pitts, mom, wifey, realtor with BRG, turned mortgage loan officer with U.S. Mortgage.
And I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and sales trainer at Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv. So excited to kick off this episode with Liz Hyman today. She was a hoot, just like her sister Alice.
Loads of personality and loads of knowledge, the both of them. She was amazing. Some of her, the things that she said, you guys are going to love it and take away and put it to use immediately.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things I love the most was talking about referrals, how to get referrals, and how sexy strategy really is. So a little bit about Liz. She is the structural thinker behind Alice Hyman LLC, a sales and consulting firm focused on building B2B sales organizations for startup to mid-sized companies that deliver extraordinary growth. Whereas many consultants merely spew creative ideas, Liz meticulously creates a roadmap of the step-by-step process for sky-high results. And a little more about Alice Hyman, if you haven't listened to that episode with her, we have had her on the show before. Alice Hyman LLC helps companies get rapid and exceptional sales growth by working with innovative CEOs, founders, business owners, and senior sales executives. They deliver results by using their unique combination of experience in sales, sales management, marketing, process implementation, and facilitation to provide the strategy and tactics for companies to exceed their goals. This is going to be an awesome episode.
You guys will love it. Let's hear from Liz Hyman.
Okay, let's get this party started. Liz, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About. We're so excited to have you on the show today.
I'm so excited because I get to become a woman your mother warned you about now.
Well, you know what? It's funny. Let's talk about that for a second, because you were saying, you know, you're not exactly Alice.
No. And you said so they may not know. You should tell them.
Well, you're like, I'm not as fun as Alice. And, you know, you should never say that because you're your own kind of fun. She is super fun. I will tell you, though, I don't know if you listened to the episode with her.
I did.
But she kind of threw us for a loop because she went on about, like, a woman your mother warned you about. And it sounded like it was going down a bad path. Like, Rachel and I were terrified.
It was going down a bad path of, like, a witch. It was not, that was not the answer we were fishing for sure.
But she turned it around, but we got scared.
I heard. That was hysterical. It was hysterical. No, I want to be a woman your mother warned you about.
Perfect.
In a good way.
That's a good opening. How would you define a woman that your mother warned you about?
Well, you know what's so funny is, and I bet you guys get this all the time. Do people say you're intimidating?
Oh, yeah. Rachel?
In a nutshell, yes, they do. And I don't intend to be, but I just am very intense and passionate. And I guess to some people that's scary.
Well, and I'm one of those people, I just don't pull my punches. Like, this is the truth. This is how it is. And if I can lie to you, I can pretend it's not true, but I'm going to tell you the truth, whether I'm consulting you or I'm your friend or, you know, whatever. I just tend not to be somebody who beats around the bush. I try to be kind, but I try to be honest and direct. And people find that incredibly intimidating coming from a woman. And I think that when we talk about the women your mother warned you about, that's one of those things is strong or powerful women. I you know, spent years learning to be strong and independent and capable. And if that intimidates you, I'm so sorry. But it's who I am, and I'm not going to change it. I'm sorry you're intimidated.
Well, I was going to say the word sorry. I'm like, I'm not sorry.
I know. I've heard you say that. Sorry, not sorry. I love that. You go, girlfriend.
I'm not sorry.
I think a lot of it is if I'm intimidating to you, then that doesn't say much about me. It actually says a lot about you, the person who's looking on me and finding me intimidating for whatever shortcomings that a person sees in themselves. And that's the really big deal, is like women like Gina and I would assume you, Liz, I'm not intimidated by other women that are powerful women. I'm inspired by them and I want to learn from them because I know where I'm at in life right now. And when I see someone crushing it, I want to A, support that person to crush it even further, and B, learn from them so that maybe whatever they're doing, I can use it in my own journey.
Oh yeah. And I am so blessed to be surrounded by people like Trish Bertuzzi and Jill Conrath and Lori Richardson. And, you know, I mean, these are women that just make you go, gosh, you guys are so powerful and so capable and so brilliant. And thank you for letting me be around and learn and grow with you.
I have to rescind my previous comment because Trish Bertuzzi did scare me.
Okay. Well, Trish can be a little scary. Sorry, Trish. I love you. But
in a good way. She's just intense and she's really powerful.
She scared the shit out of us.
Well, yeah. But I grew up in New Jersey. And so, you know, there's a certain amount of East Coast way of speaking and doing that can be a little different for the rest of us. Now that I've spent 14 years in Hawaii, I don't have that
nice
Jersey girl aggressiveness that, you know, you grow up with. That's how you speak and how you behave. And I had to learn to tone it down a lot. In Hawaii.
Well, good. Well, let's jump into something sexy, because this is the podcast that makes everything sexy, especially sales. And earlier you and I were talking about strategy in sales and how to use strategy to drive sales revenue. And you're like, strategy, a lot of people think it's not sexy, but I do. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, it's sort of become this old fashioned, oh, mission, vision, values. That's so old fashioned. We don't want to do that anymore. I want to be agile. I want to be able to move and change and grow and do different things and pivot when I need to. I don't want strategy. And I'm like, oh, you so don't get it, because strategy is so powerful and so sexy because it's exciting and I can get really passionate about a strategy and my team can get passionate about my vision and my values and my goals. And I can go, oh, I want to be a part of that. Oh gosh, that's so exciting. But when you don't have that and you're just sort of, oh, today, let's go here. Your team's like, yeah, we're going here now. Again, we're switching paths. Help me understand. And so I think it's powerful, but I also think it's sexy and fun. And I get super excited and passionate about it.
So when it comes to strategy, it's not just about strategy. You talked about strategy through the sales process. And I guess in general, strategy as far as like a sales plan or business plan, how would you define the two? How would you break them up, I mean?
So there's actually several places along the sales process that you need to have strategy. And the first thing is, if you don't have a good business strategy that has, again, your mission, your vision, where am I going? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? Why do we exist? Why is this exciting? And you need to have yours. What do we value? Who do we work with? What kinds of, how do we solve problems, right? Those are all part of your values and your culture, which will grow from that. And then your mission, which should not be some marketing piece of junk. It should be something that helps us go, this is what we do and why we do it and why we're passionate about it. But then you also need your market position. Where do we sit in here in this mass of things? Am I Nike running shoes or my Adidas court shoes? Where do I fit in this? And then you need your value prop. Why do my customers care? Right? So if I don't have that along with my goals and my strategy for getting there, how does my team get excited about it? And how does my sales team know what they're doing? Who's my ideal customer? What are we trying to accomplish? So before you can hire a sales team, you need a really strong, solid strategy. And then we talk about sales strategy. That is, you have a sales goal, which is what comes out of these strategy sessions, right? And one of the reasons that people get really disappointed, got a sales strategy, I got a revenue goal and no way to get there. So your sales strategy really, it helps you find the path to get there. Like, okay, are we growing existing customers? Are we going out after new logos? Are we going to sell this product? Or are we going to focus on this product? Are we going to this region? Are we going to that region? Like, what are we going to do? How do I get there? How do I prioritize? So now as a salesperson, I can start prioritizing my time and figuring out where to focus and what to do instead of just wandering around trying to figure out what's the right thing. And then you need strategy with your, my sister's favorite word, your complex sale, right? So if you have a complex sale and you're just reactive to what they say and do, you will never close that business. Or if you do, it's just, you're darn lucky. You really need a strategy. Who are the people? What's involved? How am I going to get there? What do I need to know? What do I need to do? And then the final thing, and this is, there's other places you use strategy, but the big things are the key thing is your key accounts. Those accounts don't just grow and flourish on their own accidentally. You have to have a strategy that involves your entire team so everybody knows what they're doing to grow that account into the future. And I always think, you know, if you're not growing that account, somebody else is working on stealing that account. So what are you doing to make sure that 5 years from now, that account is still growing and thriving and you still have a great relationship?
Oh, okay. Let's talk more about that. Let's expand on that because I think that's a key piece that a lot of companies forget or don't pay attention to, because that's really, to me, the repeat sale. And it's the easier sale to get than having to get new business. And we get the sale and then we move on to the next prospect. Do you have a strategy around how to really grow that key account?
Yeah. So there's a couple of pieces. So one is, and I always love to say, it's kind of like a shepherd, you know, you're out buying new sheep and you left the pen open. And so the sheep you have are leaving.
That's awesome.
Who would do that? But we do it every single day in business, right? So what kinds of strategies do we need around our existing customers? Well, not every customer needs a key account strategy to grow them out 5 years from now, but every account needs some sort of a plan or strategy to make sure that they're happy. So that's why I really believe in customer success as opposed to customer service. Customer service is reactive. Customer success should be proactive. What are we doing to make sure these accounts are actively using our product, know what to do, are happy with it? And so that would be, you know, that's the first step. And then the second step, who are those most important accounts that in a lot of cases make up 80% of our revenue? What are we doing to make sure we're not only growing them, but not losing them.
But the sheep are not leaving.
The sheep are not leaving.
Yeah. So that's super important. I was, while you were talking, I was thinking, you know, there's, how many times have we all purchased something? I'm thinking technology or software, and you're like, how does this work? And then you can't get customer service and they won't answer you. And then you're like, ugh. Or, you know, people that are out there using whatever your product is and they're so busy, they don't have time to tell you, I wish it was this and that and the other. So like you said, to continue to make sure that they're happy with what they are getting from you.
And when we have key accounts, so when we have these important accounts, even if we are talking to the users, how often are we maintaining a relationship with people who are benefiting from what the users are doing? So my customer success people or customer service people may be working with those people who are using it every day and are frustrated because things don't work or want to learn to do something else. But have we checked back up the ladder to say, why are you using this product? What do you want to achieve? How are we helping you get there? How often are the people who are using it happy and the people above go, I don't know why we're spending this money. Mm-hmm. So it's both places to be thinking about.
Okay, there's often a disconnect, right? The people above that invested, they invested because they heard the people below say, we need this. And then the people above go on to do the big things they need to do. And they're disconnected from the ROI of it.
Right. And so then when that next invoice comes in and we have to renew and it's, you know, $5 million, they're like, why are we spending this again?
Mm-hmm. So. One of the things that our company recently started doing, and we're in the sales training realm as well, sales and leadership. We had a key account ask for something that we normally never did, which was homework. So it was a client that actually wanted ongoing recurring training, right? And that's like, that's just magic, like the heavens opened, right? When you have that client that wants to invest that way. And he specifically wanted this way to keep it sustainable where the employees had to do homework in between every session.
That would be so cool. And what if the employees actually wanted to do it? Whoa.
Well, we've been learning a lot through that process because we're, you know, they're not very excited about it, about doing homework, but they're doing it. And we're seeing changes. We're seeing the benefits from it because we're measuring it constantly. It's a constant measurement.
Yeah, you have to do that. You also have to, it's a really good way to reinforce. So we don't do training, but we implement systems and processes, and then we train to support them and coach around them. Mm. And so what we find is, you know, way back many, many years ago when I used to work for Miller Hyman and we would implement the blue sheets, the strategic selling and green sheets, conceptual selling, and even large account management, you could train it. And you could say we're putting this process in place, but if somebody wasn't coaching and reinforcing it, it just sort of went away because salespeople are like, oh yeah, why was I doing this? And how do I do this? And I don't really have time to figure that out. And I really just need to get out selling. And they forget why they were doing the things that they were doing. And so however you can reinforce the changes that you want, because that's what training's about, right? Yeah. Is changes. So how do I reinforce those changes that I want to become permanent? And culture changes and attitude changes. Yeah. And lots of ways to do it, but it's never easy.
Well, we also created a sales challenge for a client where they part of their weekly sales reports was 70 properties. Then each property had to, in their weekly sales report, they had to put in their report how they closed business based on the things that they learned. And so they had to tap on three key areas and then give specifics. And I mean, they were incentivized on it because it was a contest. So they had the chance to like make money, win airline tickets. And I'll tell you, they jumped all over putting that in there to remember how they used the strategies they were taught.
Isn't it so funny that even as adults, we love things that are gamified?
Yes.
Like, I still want to play. Give me a way to play in my really busy day. And I'm so happy, right? So yeah, when we give them a way to play and compete, and salespeople are competitive. Let's face it. They wouldn't be salespeople if they weren't competitive. Even if they don't act like it externally, like I'm, you know, some people are super pushy competitive and other people are just very quietly, I'm going to do that. Watch me do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the gamified stuff is a faster reward. It's a quicker dopamine charge. You know, if you have to wait till the end of the first quarter to see who had top sales numbers, that's kind of like a long trip. But in a sales, like in a gamified situation, like you were just talking about, Gina, then they can immediately be like, yes, I'm winning. And salespeople are, it's so true. They're so competitive, sometimes with each other, but a lot of times, like in my case, I'm the most competitive with myself. Like I set my goals against myself so I can achieve X, you know. It's fun when you beat other people, but it's most fun when I achieve the goal I set, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this contest that we did, we first did a beta test of it and then we like rolled it out again because we learned in the first contest because we wanted them to grow business and what they were doing was like putting in repeat business that really wasn't pushing the needle as much so that we had to like push the contest a little harder in the next quarter of it. But they got super competitive because they were broken up into regions. So it was like regions battling each other, locations battling each other. It was pretty funny how intense. Like they would literally chase me down for like, where are the results? What are the new results?
Well, and I think that it's important when we're working with salespeople, they get measured against their closed revenue all the time. So they're used to that. And we have learned that when we make those numbers more public, they tend to get more competitive. But, and I hate to say this because I don't want this to be a cop-out for people, but we don't always have control over when revenue is going to close. And so when we can gamify in such a way that it helps me have more, I may not get that close, but I can win in other ways by doing things that will bring me toward closing that business. When we can help them to take the steps that they need to take and to reward them for doing the right activities at the right time in the right way. So we never just want to focus on activity, and we don't want to just measure activity, but when we can find specific things that will help them to be successful, we want to encourage that and reward them for it.
Yep. Specific awesome. Activity is what leads to the close. I mean, I imagine in the complex sale, like you were saying, it takes a lot longer to close that sale as opposed to, let's say, real estate, where a lot of times there's a target close date. So you kind of know and you hope and cross your fingers that that's actually going to happen. Sometimes it does even. But the nurturing of the sale and the touch points and the communication and the building of the relationships that's the crucial point of, you know, getting the pipeline to continue to be full and continuing pushing everybody down the right track.
And what I'll say to that is that one of the things that we see is sales organizations tend to be focused on closing business, which is great. That's our number one priority, but it's not our only priority. We have to prioritize putting leads in the top of the funnel, and we have to prioritize the activities that will move the sale forward. So what happens when we get to the end and we're like, okay, now I'm going to focus on this one. It should close in a month. And we haven't done the activities that will lead us to a smooth close. So all of a sudden we discover, oh, there's all these other buying influences. Oh, there's steps in the process I didn't know about. Oh, there's glitches I wasn't aware of. If we're not doing that work early on that keeps moving the sale forward, we're not going to close when we expect to close. And to, you know, in my experience, it's one of the primary reasons that close dates keep pushing. Everybody's always talking about push close dates. Why did the close dates push? Because a month before the sale is not the time to find out who all the buying influences are. You got to do that really early on.
Whoops.
Yeah, but it's common. You know, they know they not need to talk to all the buying influences, but right now I got to close business. But you can't close business now if you didn't do the work already.
Yeah, I've run into that a few times. I ran into that with a fairly large organization recently, and I really thought she was the primary influencer, and she was so excited and so gung-ho, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, I need to forward this to like five other people.
What?
Okay. Yeah.
That's what we call the my guy syndrome, right? I got a guy and he says it's going to close. Whenever, if you're a sales manager and you hear I got a guy, stop, because that guy is not making a $1 million or $10 million or $15 million decision. So,
oh my gosh, I got a guy.
I got a guy over here.
Hey, Warners, you have probably heard me talk on several occasions about how much I love wearing red lipstick. Lipstick is just one of those things that makes me feel good about how I look. And sometimes a little extra enhancement to my lips from Dermavogue doesn't hurt either. I've known Dr. Jim Turek of Dermavogue for years. He is not only my doctor who keeps my body healthy, he and his Dermavogue team keep my face looking healthy and maybe a little younger, maybe. I mean, I love it when people say, something looks different about your face, but they can't really tell because that's really what you want. You want to go to a place that makes your face look good and it makes people wonder what happened. So what's really cool about Dermavogue being our premier sponsor of this show is the fact that I'm a client, and I was a client before they became a partner of the show. So we're excited about that. Dermavogue has been offering the greater Myrtle Beach area the best in cosmetic and aesthetic dermatology since 2003. Opened by Dr. James Turek, Dermavogue combines expert medical knowledge with cutting-edge technology, bringing you the most effective,
flawless solutions to any skincare or cosmetic need. Their patients enjoy only the absolute best in laser technology, including photodynamic laser therapy, hydrofacials, and V-beam laser treatments, as well as the latest fillers such as Botox, skin peels, facials, and more. At Dermavogue, they engage you in the process of total body health to ensure your satisfaction with their comprehensive selection of the most up-to-date, non-invasive cosmetic, dermatology, and spa treatments. It's human nature to want to look your best, right? Let Dermavogue help you get there. Schedule your consultation today by calling 843-357-2444 or visit dermavogue.com and tell them that the Women Your Mother Warned You About sent you. You can also find them on our website. Go check it out.
And I think one thing that salespeople are tend to be guilty of, and I am the, have been very guilty of this, is they're thinking short game. They're thinking, I want to close this deal, this X deal that is supposed to close on X date. And so they're focused on those activities and forget that the long game is the big game. And all of those points that you were talking about, make sure all of the touch points are happening and all the strategies are consistent so that the pipeline is always full. So the short game is really not as important because your long game is... His breach is so wide.
But it's so hard,
it's hard
to change the culture of a company. So how many companies do you walk into and the culture is, what are we closing this month? What are we closing this quarter? Got to get it closed this quarter. Got to get it closed this quarter. How often does your sales manager talk to you about the top of the funnel? How often does the VP of sales pay attention to what's going on and your activities and what your leads look like at the top of the funnel? They may look at numbers, but they're not looking at activity in a lot of cases. And those that are seeing great results. And they have a predictable funnel, not one that every time they look, something's pushing. You know, oh, that's not really going to happen until next year. We don't like that. That is not fun.
I hate hearing that phrase. Well, let's talk a little bit about culture. How do you change a culture that's not healthy enough to look at the top of the funnel?
So, and this is where I'm not popular. My favorite word is process, right? So if we're reactive and if we sit down and have meetings with our salespeople, as sales managers or VPs, and we're talking about what's happening right this minute, what's closing, we create that culture. So if we have a sales process, so if we understand what are all the steps in our sales process, how do we move a sale forward? How does something move from one stage of the funnel to the next? And we have actually a funnel with 5 stages, not 15 or 30, which doesn't make any sense to anybody. And we're all consistent in using it. Now, as a sales manager, I can do a proper funnel review. I can go in and I can say, here's the shape of our funnel. Let's look at the shape of your funnel. Oh my goodness, there's not enough stuff in the top because my sales math tells me there's got to be 10 in the top to get one out the bottom, right? So you can't create an effective culture that focuses on being proactive and strategic if you don't have processes to reinforce. Right. So we have to have a process for running a sales funnel. We have to have a process for running a sales meeting. And our team has to know, what are we going to ask for every single week in our meeting? What are we going to do? What should they expect? And those expectations and those systems need to be those things that move the sale forward. If all we ever talk about is what's getting ready to close, tell me what's happening with this thing that's getting ready to close, we create that culture. So the sales culture, and if I'm the president of the company and all I ever ask about is what's going to close, if I'm the VP of sales and all I ever ask about is what's going to close, then we create that culture. So it comes from the top.
Yeah.
And it includes putting process in place that helps us focus on the bigger picture and to be proactive and strategic and not always reactive.
So for the salespeople who are listening to this, and we know that the culture starts at the top, what strategy, since strategy is sexy to you, what strategy would you offer up to that salesperson or sales manager, especially in an enterprise type of organization? What strategy would you give them to push the guy or gal at the top to improve improve culture?
Well, so one of the ways we do it is by being effective ourselves. So if I am using my funnel properly and I have learned how to manage the different stages of my funnel and I have learned my sales math and I use my funnel to make sure that I have prioritized my activity and prioritized my leads and I'm closing business and being effective, people will start to ask, what are you doing? What are you doing differently? So, and if I'm a sales manager and I'm doing that with my team and my team's being really effective, people will begin to ask, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And often that's the only way we can change culture is by changing our own behavior and modeling what we want others to do. You can always try, if you're high enough in an organization, to talk about why changing the culture will get better results. But if you're a salesperson in an enterprise, there's no way you're going to have that impact. The only way you can have it is by finding your own process and success.
That's great advice. Because I think there's a lot of frustration with salespeople who feel like they have no direct control over changing that culture. But you're saying, you know, just changing your behavior can start the process.
And you can change the conversation. So you can say, well, you know, here's what's going on at the bottom of my funnel. Let me tell you about why I think these are moving or not moving and what help I'm going to need to get them moving. So if you begin to change the conversation and ask for what you need to move sales forward, then your sales managers are going to have to start responding to you being responsible, asking for help. Although I do have to say, I had a manager once and I said, look, she had never been a sales manager. She had no idea how to do it. And I had, you know, taught Miller Hyman programs. So I knew how to be, and I had run the Asia Pacific division of Miller Hyman. So I knew how to be a sales manager. And I said, here are the things that I need from you to be successful. And she said, we have reports, just fill them out. So if you have a manager like that, I would say you're not in the right place.
Yeah.
Find a place where you have a manager who cares about your success and helps you be successful. Yeah.
It's a whole different, whole different situation.
Yeah.
Well, and shame on the guy at the top for not helping that manager to understand that. They need to call Pivot 10 Results and get training. But I think,
absolutely,
you know, I think a lot of sales organizations just get caught up in they're in the whirlwind. You know, they're in the business rather than taking time to step out and work on the business and take a look at the business. And, you know, I guess that's where you guys, Gina and Liz, both your companies come in, is to be able to get that bird's eye view and say, hey, this is what you could be doing so that everything could function better. Because I think just people get stuck in putting out fires. You know?
Oh yeah. And put the culture, there's a whole culture around putting out fires. And of course, when we put out fires, we get all of these adrenaline and dopamine hits, right? So people love to get all caught up in that and all the, this one's mad at this one and I'm going to call over here.
And I can't believe they did this.
Blah, 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 right? So there's all this dopamine and adrenaline going on, and it's the wrong dopamine, guys. It's the wrong adrenaline. You guys need to be closing business. So if your customers are unhappy, find out why they're unhappy. Stay calm, figure out who can fix it, ask them for help, and move on. Go close some business. Don't get caught up in everyday fires. It is one of the things, and sales managers too. Sales managers are always putting out fires and not coaching. If you spent 80% of your time coaching and less than 20% putting out fires, you wouldn't have any fires left to put out.
The interesting thing that I have experienced about these fires is they usually kind of put themselves out. Like the things that I've seen in real estate deals on both the sales side and the mortgage side, which I'm familiar with, they'll get crazy and everybody freaks out about this and that. And it usually, if you give it a little bit of time, and like you said, focus on something more productive, then the fire puts itself out. But like it's that you nailed it. It's a dopamine hit to go in the other guy's office and be like, and this and this and that, and you wouldn't believe, and people are just this and that. So what a waste of time.
It's a total waste of time. And there are some companies that their whole culture is built on putting out fires. Mm. And so you have to pull yourself out of that. You have to say, breathe, slow down, okay, customer, I hear you're unhappy. I'm going to figure out who can fix this for you. Stop saying, I'm going to fix it for you. I'm going to figure out who can fix this for you, and I'm going to put you in touch. Now go and do that. The other thing I will say is, if I go all the way back to that sexy strategy, so if I know who my ideal customers are, and that's who I'm pursuing in my sales process, and that's who I'm selling to, guess how many fewer fires I'm going to have? How often are the fires that you're having with customers that you really shouldn't have?
Mm-hmm.
So,
or steps in the process that were skipped to try to move it towards closing faster. And because those steps were skipped, that's why the fire broke out. That happens a lot too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm, interesting. Fire prevention by Liz.
It's
I'm
true.
Sorry, that just reminds me of firemen. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I just
no.
had
oh,
hot
no.
firemen. Sorry.
We just sorry. Had some hot firemen standing around. There'd be less fires. We'd be focusing on more important things.
That's right.
I have another question for you, Liz. Your company works with startup to mid-sized companies. What are some strategies for startups, and especially founder-based companies, that they might not even have enterprise teams, or just they're smaller, but they need to hit the ground running to start scaling? We see a lot of challenges with that startup company that Rachel's already talked about this, that they're working in the business, not on the business. They're experts in what they do, and they haven't built the right team to grow their sales.
So there's a couple of things. First is that as the founder, you are your first salesperson. You have to go out and do it, and you have to figure out what the process is, what matters to people, how they perceive their problems. You have to do all that work before you bring other people in. And I think the second thing is that people who are not familiar with sales tend to think that salespeople are salespeople are salespeople. Like, it's all the same. It doesn't really matter. And they don't realize that there are all different kinds of salespeople with different skill sets and different strengths and different things they like doing. Some are closers. Some are door openers. Some are really good at moving the sale forward. So if I don't know what my sales process is and I don't know what the job is that I'm defining, how do I know how to hire the salesperson to do the job that I'm defining? And so what often happens with founders is they hire that first salesperson, they spend $100,000 plus, and it's a disaster. They're like, why can't this person sell for me? I can do this better myself. Well, let me tell you why they can't sell for you. You haven't identified your ideal customer. You're not clear about your positioning in the marketplace. You don't understand your value process, your proposition. You don't have a sales process. You don't have a sales strategy. So unless you luck out and get a salesperson who happens to instinctively or through experience know all this stuff and build it for you, you're not going to be successful. You are going to waste money and more money and more money on salespeople who cannot deliver because you haven't done the work to build the infrastructure they need to be successful. So we just think sales happens. Sales is not magic. It's not magic. It's actually a process, and it's built on information. And so that, I think, is the biggest mistake. So as a founder, if I want to build a team, I need to understand my sales process. I need to understand all those things I talked about and then figure out who's doing what part of the job. Do I have a marketing team, or are my salespeople going to go out and prospect for their own leads? So I need to really understand that, so I hire people that are the right people for the right job.
It goes back to what you said at the top of this show, going back to the basics of having an overall plan. It's like having a business plan, basically. What is your mission? What is your vision? What are your values?
Yep. And I think the other thing is we tend to think about all those things from our perspective. Like, if you look at people's websites, it's all about them. Like, this company, the website's all about them. The value proposition, they don't have a value proposition. They have a statement about what they do, right? Their mission is all about what they do. It's not about their customers. And so now I expect my salesperson to go out and sell what I do. Mm-hmm. Guess what? People don't buy what you do. They never buy what they do. They buy what matters to them. They buy a solution to a problem. They buy a possibility. They buy an opportunity. They don't buy what you do. They don't care what you do. don't care what you do.
And they also don't care what you have done and what makes you so important because you have done this.
And what your goal is. Your goal is not about them.
Yeah, it's so true. And another thing that happens is when salespeople look at the competition and they think it is magic, like so-and-so closes so much business and they're just so... It's just, they just have a gift. It's just magic. And I don't think it's really magic. I think, like you've mentioned several times, Liz, they have a process and they have a strategy and they probably actually follow said strategy consistently. And that's why it appears to be magic from the outside to people that are wandering around aimlessly. And I can assure you, I have wandered around for many years.
Oh, we all have. But I think there is a certain amount of what we do that's magic. And that is that when I'm sitting face to face with you, listening and caring about what's going on with you and figuring out how to solve a problem for you, to me, that is the magic of sales. All the rest of it is not mystical or magical. That mm-hmm. moment, that's the only part that's magic.
As long as it feels like magic to the customer.
Right. But it does if I care.
Yeah, exactly.
If I truly care exactly. about making your world better and I walk away, if I know I don't have the right solution for you, then we can make magic mm-hmm. and I can make, and you can be really happy and successful and feel really great about what we did.
Love it.
I have one more businessy okay. question for okay. you. What are some strategies for getting referrals? This seems to be another piece that gets left on the table that people are not taking advantage of.
Okay, so I'm going to throw out a statistic for you. And if I get it wrong and somebody knows that I've got it wrong, please forgive me, but it's close. So about 80% of satisfied customers say that if their customer asked them for a referral, they would give it. And less than 10% are ever asked. So there's your basic strategy. Ooh. Just ask if you know your customer is happy. So the second thing is knowing what you're asking for. So don't say, hey, do you know somebody who could use what I'm doing? That's a really, you know, sure. You know, what am I supposed to say? But if you say, hey, I'm trying to reach out to hospitals that have this kind of specific need. Do you have any friends that you could introduce me to that you think might need that? Now I can go, oh, let me think about that. Or if I say, look, these are the five hospitals that I'm trying to go after right now, and I notice that you're connected to people at all five of them. Would you mind introducing me? Well, I can do that. But don't just say, hey, can you give me some referrals? Because I can't do that. I don't know how.
Yeah, you're putting pressure on that person to really have to think, and they're busy. You need to be really specific.
Very specific. Make it the easier you make it for them, the more likely they are to do it. And, you know, it's not that they don't want to do it. If they love you and they're happy and they're successful and you take good care of them, they want to give referrals. It's not what they think about all day long, and they don't know how to do it. Unless somebody says to them, oh, you guys are doing this, I wish I knew how to do this. And they go, oh, I can set you up with the guy who can do that for you. But otherwise, it doesn't cross their mind.
Oh, that's really good. We've been working in higher ed lately, and there's a huge opportunity to continue that on a bigger scope. So from a referral process, my request is, who do you know in these 16 colleges that you could refer me to?
Yeah, and I would even narrow it down. Ask them for three.
Yeah.
You know, and look them up. We're all on LinkedIn. Use your LinkedIn navigator and figure out who do they know at those colleges. Yeah. And then say, hey, how well do you know so-and-so?
Yeah, exactly.
Or exactly. I see your boss knows so-and-so.
Productive, you know, stalking. That's cool.
Yeah. And Alice is the ultimate stalker. She is so good at it. If you want to talk about stalking, that is the woman to have the conversation with, because she is the ultimate social media stalker. And she is so good at getting referrals in social media.
And she is so good at sharing stuff on social media.
Oh, she's, yes.
I just realized that we're going to really get some good traction on this because she'll be sharing this.
We will share it out to everybody. Absolutely.
What a blessed and amazing time we live in right now that we have these social media platforms in which to do the stalking like that, because it used to be not that long ago. There wasn't a way to... You would have to do a lot harder research to find out how to ask for that specific referral.
So. Oh, yeah. And yet we use social media so poorly. Mm-hmm. We send out cold emails to people on social media. Really?
Oh, don't get me started.
Don't get her started. We'll be here another hour.
There are so many great things you can do with social media. Don't do that. Do something valuable and focus your time. So that you are getting, again, referrals, second easiest, right? So you said earlier, the easiest business you'll ever get is from happy customers. Second easiest business you'll ever get is from referrals. So let's go cold call.
Boom. Boom. Easy peasy. Rachel, do you have any other questions for Liz?
I think we should go to our signature closing questions and ask Liz... In a nutshell, in general, how do you define the word sexy? Like, what's sexy to you aside from strategy, which we already know?
Well, I think power is sexy, and that has always been true for me. And I think I make this mistake with men because I get attracted to narcissists because they think they're powerful. So you got to find real power. And I find power very sexy. And so to me, what is power? Power is having control of your own self. Power is being an influencer in a positive way and encouraging people around you to be successful and to achieve their goals. That to me is power. And that is so sexy. I love watching people build the people around them and to sort of influence in a positive way. You'll probably think I'm crazy, but Obama was so sexy in that way that he could bring all the people around him into the most positive discussions, the most positive light. That's sexy.
I love that. I haven't heard someone say the word power, and I never even thought about it, but that is sexy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is.
Any advice that you would give to women, especially, I know you've mentioned Trish, which we've had on the show. Lori, we tried to get Jill on the show. She said she doesn't do podcasts anymore. trying to get Lori on the show. I'm dropping their names because maybe that'll have some influence because you're part of their circle. But so you work with a lot of women. What advice would you give to women in business, women in sales?
So I go back to this being authentic. When I was young and I started, I used to show up to do the Miller Heiman trainings in a blue suit, you know, and flat shoes and a really traditional classic haircut. And I really felt that I had to be someone. I had to prove that I was somebody by how I presented. And I still think that how we present is important. I think that the clothes that we wear are important, but I think that I can be authentic and I can be real and I can win people over with my passion about what I'm doing, my skills, the value that I bring. And I think as women, we have to know we bring value. We have to come forth as who we are with the value that we bring, with the caring that we bring, and win people over that way instead of trying to be something that looks and smells and acts like a man, because we don't have to be that. We can be who we are. And we don't have to be sexy in the sense of wearing sexy clothes. We can be sexy in our own power and our own success.
Mic drop.
If I do that, I'll break the mic, and I only have one. So
don't break it. Oh, and we appreciate you using a mic, so thank you for that. It's been so great having you on the show today. Thank you for carving out some time to spend with us and give really great sexy strategies to our listeners.
You're welcome. And do I get added to the list now?
The list of being a woman your mother warned you about?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. You're in the club.
Thank you.
We're letting, so excited. We're letting you in. If our listeners want to learn more about you, what are the best places that they can do that?
Well, they can find me across social media. So they can find me on Twitter, Liz Hyman, H-E-I-M-A-N. They can find me on LinkedIn. They can find me on Facebook. And I am not very good at Instagram, but you can find me there. You can also go to alicehyman.com, which is our website, and you can find us there.
Awesome. And we will put all of those links in our show notes so people will have access to click to that. If they didn't write it down while they're listening, driving in the car, that information will be in our show notes. Thank you one more time to Liz and also to all of our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. To connect with me directly or learn more about Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv, you can visit GinaTremarco.com. And for Rachel,
to connect with me, Rachel Pitts, you can find me all over social media as Rachel on Real Estate, and find all our social media links and free downloads on our website at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
And hey, if you haven't had a chance to give us a review yet, that includes you too, Liz. If you have not given us a review or a rating, please do that on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, but we really like iTunes. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.